You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
As we get to quantum mechanics, though, we begin to notice in nonlinear dynamics, we begin to notice that there's something more than just the measurable and discrete. There's some kind of little wigglies just beyond the discrete. Wiggly wobbly vibrations kind of things, a little fuzziness, a little bit of fuzzy. Things are really a little fuzzier than what we thought. Eh? You see, because now we begin to notice that things are not really orderly, they're frequently disorderly. Not only that, but they're frequently illogical. Not only illogical, but even unpredictable. Not determined, but actually free. Those things, these little iron filings seem to be just behaving on their own. Free. We notice that they're creative. They start to grow little things unpredictably. And they follow amazing patterns, imaginative. We see that they're progressive and not finished, as we said. Each thing goes from perfection to perfection to perfection. Intermingled and interconnected, diffuse, non-local, comprehensible but not definable, observable but not measurable, simultaneous, sequential, and neither. A thing is both simultaneous, sequential, and neither of the above, in that the future precedes the present, just like the past is until tomorrow. The past won't even get here till tomorrow. Why worry about it? That's true. The past is scheduled to arrive Thursday, I think. Today's Wednesday. You see, there's an infinite potentiality because now you're starting to get field effects. We see that things are both time-dependent and also time-independent. That's why we have the Schrödinger equations. One is time-dependent, the other is time-independent. We see that things are stochastic, unlimited, sporadic. We see that things are possibilities rather than limitations. And most important, we see that at the submicroscopic level, reality is already altered merely by observation. We see that things are expansive, organic, that they relate more to context, the content. We move from, here importantly, we move from objective to subjective. We move from the realm of force to the realm of power. We move from certainty to uncertainty, finished to poised, and we therefore see the freedom of the will. If the left-hand column was all there was, there would be no spiritual reality possible. Everything would be fixed and deterministic. We have freedom of choice. The one can observe, one can describe this world as the maximum opportunity required for the evolution of consciousness and the evolution of one's karma. One could see this world as perfectly purgatorial. This is a dimension where choice is unlimited. From the most horrific and gruesome to the most beatific. The whole range, from being the warrior to being the savior to being the victim to be the doctor, the lawyer, the nurse. This is a world of infinite opportunity. Unfinished souls would find this the ideal place where you get motivation, you got choice. You got others with you about the same level. This is the perfect world. And if this world did not exist the way it is now, you would have to recreate another exactly like it. Without a world in which you can undo negative past karma by making a better choice this time, what would be the point of physical existence? What would be the point of existence at all? Who was it said it? Ramana Maharshi said it. The world you see is a world of projections, of your own perceptions. No such world exists. So if we change our view of the world, we say, what is the purpose of the world? You can only make it wrong if you've already presumed a certain purpose. If this was a celestial realm, nothing but rain, nothing but peace and love and perfection reigned, you'd be in a celestial realm. You wouldn't be here. Why would you be here? Nobody said it was a celestial realm. You ever get noticed that you have earned the right to a celestial realm, yeah? When you leave the body, if you're lucky, you go there, right? We all hope so. That's what Jesus Christ said, the Buddha, they all said. If you want to experience celestial realms, avoid sin, yeah? Avoid sin. And sin is based on ignorance. Therefore what? God help you. Therefore, we're all here due to God's infinite mercy. Out of his infinite mercy, God said, well, everyone's here is ignorant because of the nature of consciousness itself. Therefore, here is the perfect world in which you can choose again this time. Whoa. Consciousness is limited to identification with mind and body, this mind and this body, till it gets up to 600. And then at 600, it's all one lifetime, and you remember many lifetimes. Each lifetime, what you remember the easiest, there were quite profound spiritual lessons in each lifetime, and those are very, very unforgettable. You can re-experience them. And what was learned in that particular lifetime is stunningly clear and obvious. Therefore, one feels less badly about this lifetime and saying, great lessons are being learned here. Wonderful things are being learned. Without this lifetime, this could not have been learned. Very profound things are learned in each lifetime. And they go back over considerable courses of time. That's neither here nor there. People don't have to go with karma or not. Everybody goes with karma because your spiritual choices in this instant are already determining what you are in the next instant, are they not? Karma is continuous. If you stop identifying with the physicality of the body, you see there's nothing but karma. There's nothing but consciousness evolving over great courses of time. And because you participate in it, that is not exactly a stunningly glorious event. We all get to participate in the evolution of consciousness and make our contribution for better or for worse. If we follow the great spiritual teachers, hopefully they are for better. For better for ourselves and for better for all around us. But if we turn this into a celestial realm, what good will it be? Where will all the people who have all this rather severe negative karma to overcome, where are they going to go? They have to go to a world where you can go from the very bottom, the most horrific, bombing millions of innocent people in the name of God, let's say, which is all the way to Mother Teresa. Where can you go where you have the optimal opportunity spread out? Every instant, you see how choice is being made. Instant by instant, choice is being made, instant by instant. And the karmic propensity then shifts with each choice. With everything we say yes to, we collapse the wave function and create a new subjective, experiential, calibratable reality. Ah, wonderful. So, one can be quite spiritual and quite advanced in one's spirituality and still logical and reasonable and walk around and fool everybody. They think you're just like them, and it's best to leave them in that belief. I'll tell you, if you tell them otherwise, they will start looking at you like chocolate and decide what should happen to you is what happens to all good chocolates. Boom. Boom. I don't know, that's the latest fad on the planet. The latest fad is to blow up people you don't agree with. You know? Busloads, countries, It's just a fad. The old ways don't work anymore. Daggers and swords and stuff don't get you very far anymore. So you got to get shoe bombed or something. You see, life, when as you expand your view of life, it becomes more and more comical. You understand? It becomes eventually ludicrous. Ludicrous that the mind must go to such extremes before it gets the point. That's all what this planet is, what this world is the extremes to which the ego is driven to get a point. That's all it is, folks. How dumb can it be after a thing happens 142 times and they keep on doing it? You see? Over and over we come back. The resistance of the ego to surrendering its view of the world is very, very tenacious. The ego is very, very strong in its own way. How do we know? Because life survived in a very alien... This planet was not very friendly to life. The fact that it survived at all, its core must be quite tenacious. So you'll see egocentricity is quite tenacious. Egocentricity. So the great demon ego that we fear and demonize and criticize, seek to destroy, transcend, etc., pray to God to evaporate it, is the remnant of evolution of life, and we are in the difficult position of being human beings. I feel compassionate towards all human beings. And if I was St. Peter, I would leave everybody in. I'd say, where you been? Earth. You're in. When you realize the strength and the courage and the valor that it takes to lead a human life, if you're honest with yourself about your own life and look out and realize everybody's lived that and then some, now you respect all of life. You see the divinity of all of life expressing itself as the human potential, the sacredness of all of life. So the spiritual person now awakens to the sacredness of all of life, the nobility of merely being a human, to be a human in all the agony that that entails. From appendectomies to nursing to childbirth to being shot to death with bullets. How many lifetimes bullets? Well, thankfully, happily, bullets were only there in a couple of lifetimes. They didn't have any bullets before. Yeah. You just did it with swords. That was the gentlemanly way of doing it, frankly. The way they do it nowadays. I wouldn't give you a nickel. Now, we used to kill each other right. In the Crusades, I'll tell you, when I skewered that guy, he was skewered. And when he skewered me, I was skewered, I'll tell you. Two champions, I'll tell you. Snicker snack, and we did it to each other. I did it for Jesus Christ, and he did it for Allah. In the name of Allah, he skewered me through and through, and he was good. We picked each other carefully. Right through the heart, both of us. And went out of body instantaneous, looking at the bodies laying there, and broke into hysteria. I did it for Jesus, and he said, I did it for Allah. And we loved each other before and after forever. See, because it is out of love for each other that we each sacrifice our life. Huh? As you can see, this moment, you are sacrificing your life for all that are. Each one of us sacrifices ourselves for the all. Huh? Each one of us expresses the potentiality of divinity and the realization of that divinity. And that's what brings us here today. So, consequently, nobody has to know what they calibrate at. Everybody's over 200. People worry about such things. Don't worry about it. The love of God is infinite and unlimited. And so we all reflect that. And in reflecting that, we change and uplift the field. And the power is in the field, not the content of the field. So we all become the potentiality with which we were created. And in so doing, we benefit all of mankind and bring about peace on earth. And so we'll reconvene at 1:30. And I thank you. Not as always sure where it is. So that's an orientation. Let's see. We left off. Where did we leave off, Sigar?
We left off.
You're supposed to keep track of that. Now you went. Transcend. We were at number 5. Right. And we were at number 6. We're up to number 7.
Right.
Good God. We're halfway to heaven.
Yeah. That's an old song.
If you only get to 7, you still got a lot of karma to pay off. If you get up to 16, you're done. Ah, yes. Is that 7? Yes, okay. All right, so we calibrated the level of consciousness up to 600. Because 99.9999% of the world never goes beyond 600. The other thing is at 600, half the people leave the planet anyway. And anybody who's been in a divine state knows what I mean. It is very similar to the near-death experience. The option to breathe, come see, come saw. Is this thing on?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And it seems by accident. It's actually by karmic intent. Whether the body breathes or not, but 50% of the time it doesn't. So, first of all, not many people were 600 even on the planet anymore, and very few of them remain in public, practically none, in fact. The high 500s remain in public, 600 and over, very rarely. Of those over 600, 50% leave the planet. Just, of those that remain, what percent... interface with the world, more than 5%, more than 4%, more than 3%, more than 2%. Very rare indeed. Very rare indeed. That's why the sage throughout history has been revered, because to remain in a physicality and able to communicate with the world is a relative rarity. It becomes even rarer beyond 700. So at 600 is traditionally called enlightenment. It's transcending the linear domain and experiencing the field as the essence of one's own reality. This is identifying existence as one's reality. It's not the highest state, as they say. At age 3, the presentation, the problem at age 3 was up here, see? So, self as existence, then, was what the confrontation was. And these are the great teachers of enlightenment, you see. When I was in Korea, that was the title. Self as beyond existence and non-existence. That was the confrontation at age 3. Age 3, the consciousness was 840. Is reality existence or non-existence? And that is the dividing line between Hinayana and Mahayana Buddhism, whether one's enlightenment is that of all of mankind or just the personal self, you know, to seek enlightenment. The pathway of negation then takes you to the void. I don't think we calibrated the void on here, but the void is very, very impressive, and the pathway of negation will take you to what you are sure is the fabled great enlightened space, the void, which recurred in this lifetime. Let's see, I don't think the void is up there. We have permission to do the void. The void as an experiential reality is over 900, 910. 9:15. So we should put that on there. Boy, it is 9:15. It seems like the absolute ultimate. However, having already experienced the presence as infinite love, a love of a quality of love that dissolves all in its presence, at the same time infinitely powerful, the negation then of love as an attachment is the error of the Hinayana, the pathway of negation. The error, the pathway of negation then is to void love as an attachment. That's a misunderstanding of the nature of love. The world of the ego considers love as an emotion. It goes from here to there. Dualistic, there's an I and it loves you. And that's the basis of homicide and suicide. All the great operas. In the end, she stabs herself and they die together, you know. Yeah. Homicide and suicide. So that kind of love, yes, is an attachment. That's an emotionality and it's an attachment. And it's seeing the source of happiness is outside oneself. Therefore, one is always vulnerable and therefore jealous, and delusions of infidelity and of paranoia abound, and anxiety and fear of loss and rage at infidelity, etc. So love is an emotion that goes from me to you as an attachment, then is a block on the way to enlightenment. Love, as we explained it this morning, is a way of being in the world. Lovingness is a way of being. And that lovingness carries forth with your relationship with bushes, with trash in the alley, with little black beetles, with crickets in your room. We had the confront with a crippled cricket last night. A crippled cricket with one leg, God bless him. So I said, well, this is a curiosity, so we use the arm. Should we use euthanasia? It says no. Should we put him back in nature? It said yes. So we put him back in nature. I made that mistake in one lifetime. The reason I brought up euthanasia is one time I went through surgery without anesthesia, only this time the pain was excruciating. And I thought, my God, what's the matter? Because I'd always been able to handle it before. And this time it was severe. A hernia repair without anesthesia is a grueling experience. And even though I kept letting go, resisting it, it persisted, which had never happened before. And then in the middle of it, I remembered. And now I understood it, and I was able to accept it. And in that lifetime, many men have had a lot of lifetimes as warriors. And with a sword, I got him right through the groin. And I think it was during the Holy War, is the same one where we killed each other. Anyway, I got him right through the groin. So the agony was exactly where I had done him in with a spear. And the guilt was not having killed him. No, the guilt was not having stabbed him. The guilt was that I did not administer the coup de grace and put him out of his misery. I left him there to die of the suffering and infection from his wounds and fever and convulsions probably. Took him days to die. So the agony of that over the centuries finally undid that negative karma. I re-experienced exactly what I had assigned him to do, to what I consider now moral cowardice, because the commitment of integrous warriors is to each other's warriorship. Warriorship, you know. Who you're the warrior for is sort of irrelevant lifetime by lifetime. Anyway, that's not explicable. It's the way that men traditionally cross over the level of 200. When the way you cross over from cowardice to integrous courage is you literally do walk into the bullets, literally, in the name of a higher principle, in the name of God, country, the king, divinity, womanhood, the family, the university. For whatever reason you do it, it's for some higher principle other than an egoistic one. And you transcend 200, never have to return below the level of 200. Women do the same thing through childbirth. facing death for the sake of life and nurturance, and so the woman crosses over. 200, never to return. All right, so Christ Buddha, and on this planet, the human nervous system seems to be only able to carry about 1,000. Don't forget, these are logarithmic figures. The jump from 980 to 1,000 is tremendous. And the amount of energy that courses through the nervous system really taxes the capacity of the nerves. And so for some years, if you climb up the higher levels, you go through periods where the slightest thing that is out in any chakra, in any archetype in the collective unconscious, brings extreme agonizing pain. It's like you're being electrocuted slowly, sublethal dose, until you locate what chakra, what archetype, what significance, what that is, and through prayer, clear it, and then it disappears. So there was some concern about having to go through that for some years, and one day we were in Korea, and Susan opened up the drawer, and there was a Buddhist Bible, and she opened it, and it said, and the Buddha said that his bones felt like they'd been cracked, and he suffered agonizing pain as he was attacked by the demons. And then I felt okay. It's okay for Buddha, it's okay for me. The archangel, as I say, in the moment of the pits of hell, a thought went out. If there is a God, I ask him to help me. And the way I phrase it is, a cruising archangel picked up on that. Gave a passing notice, which blew me off for 30 years, silenced the mind forever, and took me out of the world altogether. 50,000 and up, if you ran that through the human nervous system, would leave you as a puddle of bubbling protoplasm. 50,000, so it's not for this domain. And therefore, all the divine states calibrate as infinite. So I like the analogy of a step-down generator, that the presence of God is of such profound power that it has to be stepped down through the calibrated levels of traditional, the great archangels and the angels, and finally into the level of the avatar and the sage and utilizable energy. So 50,000 volts is not very useful in the household. It's only when you get it down to 110 you can work with it. So this lifetime I've spent a lot of time trying to avoid getting fried while still in a body. So let's move on to the next one. We thought of a funny joke this morning. What is a New Ager? A New Ager is somebody who goes into the store and buys all the Venus flytraps and trains them to become vegetarians. Take away the fly. You like cucumbers, sweetheart. Eat a little piece of tomato seed. You'll like that. we have to laugh at our own naivete, you know, our own naivete. You know, it's a child within us, the spiritual child within us. You know, it just believes in Santa Claus and all kinds of wondrous things. And it's painful as we grow up into spiritual maturity. It's not easy. It's difficult. And all right. So the progressive fields of realization, I thought, is sort of interesting because in meditation, what is it we were speaking about this morning? And we said somewhere in here, from here over is silence. All of this is going on, first of all, automatically, and secondly, silently. Witnessing is not something you elect to do. See? When you're trying to depersonalize mind, if the mind was you or personal, you could command it to stop doing these things. It doesn't stop. It's automated on its own. The mind then is self-energizing, self-propagating. And at first what we recognize is form. And the understanding the theory of enlightenment and consciousness itself, we started to explain that here is the world of form, the world of ego, the Newtonian paradigm, which you folks can't see back there. here's the paradigm of form. See, this is form, and we see it. We think it's causality. Then outside of that is a field, a sustaining field, the nonlinear dynamics, the field of nonlinear dynamics, stochastic occasions, which are not predictable, which we'll get to a little bit later. Outside of that is the infinite field, an infinite field, nonlinear, no form, of infinite power. If this is ego and this is spirit, simple, yeah? Ego and spirit, simple. So, spirit is the field, ego is what we focus on. Now, the ego says to you, if you let go of me, you'll die. We're convinced that it is because of our ego that we survive. The truth is, we survive in spite of the ego. It's the field that keeps the cork afloat. So, karmically, where you go depends on how much lead you have in your cork. I am hopeful there's less lead in my cork, having gone through a hernia repair without anesthesia. That the cork flows higher. And so you see, nothing is arbitrary. There's nothing arbitrary. Divinity, there is no room for arbitrary. Choice is ours, but where we float depends on our buoyancy, the specific gravity of the water, etc. So justice is automatic, continuous, and ongoing because it is an innate essence and principle of creation, which itself is continuous and ongoing and evolving. So we register this form with recognition. That starts out all kinds of memories about poor old Rover and how he got run over by the car, etc., etc. And how do we know that? Because behind that is the watcher, the experiencer, the witness. So it is really quite easy to withdraw from the identifying with the content of consciousness in a meditative or contemplative state and instead begin to identify with the field. It's very easy as a habit and a style to focus peripherally on the field instead of the content of the field. Then you become a little absent-minded. You don't know where the keys to the car are. So you have a wonderful mate who remembers where the keys of the car are as you wander about contemplating the mysteries of the universe, right? When it identifies progressively with the field instead of the content of the field. The content of the field is kaleidoscopic. You understand the mind? The content of the field is kaleidoscopic. There's no point in fixating on that because it's constantly varying. And so one can find some kind of silence and permanency in identifying more and more with peripheral vision and with the field. Right now, there's the field of all of us together. There's the field of all of us together at a big convention in the state of someplace or other. I forget where we are. Where is it? California. So as you identify progressively with space, sometimes you have to relocate where you are. That's the only trouble. Awareness is doing this all the time. So you stop identifying with that up there, and you begin to identify with the silence of this. See, awareness is aware, but it doesn't say anything about it. Commentary doesn't occur until you get up there. This is just aware. The observer witness is aware, and its functioning is automatic, coming out of the light of consciousness itself. It is not a voluntary decision. It's not something that you choose. It just happens of itself. The unmanifest creation is called the Godhead. As the manifest, as God, as self, the light of consciousness. So this is the step-down transformer. And the awareness of this as reality is 1/10,000th of a second before the ego cuts in. That's all it takes, 1/10,000th. And the opening into that space is just prior to thought. So even now, as you watch your thoughts, you'll see any thoughts or commentaries are actually coming just prior to the thought. So don't look between the thoughts, because you're not going to find it, I don't think, there. You find it just prior to the thought. So you watch the mind thinking, and what was there before that thought just occurred? What was just there where the thought occurred? That's the way I comb my hair, by shadow. I can't stand looking at myself in the mirror, so I say, hey, here's how it goes. You know. I comb the silhouette. The silhouette, I can get the outline of it. So I comb the silhouette, and that, everybody in the world's happy then. All right. Because in meditation, nobody tells you where to focus. You can meditate for years and years and get nowhere at all. Because nobody's telling you where to focus. Unless you know and have been there yourself, you don't know where to tell people where to look. You look right prior to the thought. Now, every thought, you will catch it. Right prior to that thought, there was nothing. There was nothing prior to the thought. Right now, there is nothing, thinking. And then the thought arises out of nothing. There's actually no real thinking that's going on because the mind is actually silent. That which you are is easily identifiable in the silence. So you practice more and more being in the silence and witnessing the thinkingness from a greater and greater distance until you realize that you are not the TV set. In the beginning, you think you're the program. In the end, you realize that you're what turns the switch. All right. So let's go to the next one.
We'll go to the map.
What?
The map.
Maps. Maps. Is that the next one?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I don't know if we're ready for such a rapid advance. Oh, yes, we are. We'll take on the world. All right. So we said right now we're working on calibrating thousands of things. We went through Europe, calibrated all the great cathedrals, historical places, the life of Napoleon, Napoleon's tomb, everything. The application of consciousness research, then, is in business, where in business, integrity is the new paradigm of success. The world I grew up, profit, the solar plexus. It was the world of the solar plexus at 190. Pride of your title, whether you got windows on two sides of your office, what kind of a car you drive, your address. At 190, success and pride in success was what motivated people. Make something out of yourself. I want to be somebody. Somebody. What is somebody? At 190, the ambition, the success is money and profit. Okay. Then in the late 80s, shifted over to 207. Now, 207, you're over a new level called integrity. So the new yardstick in our world is integrity. After Enron and the collapse of all those corporations, we saw what non-integrity did. It ruined everybody's retirement fund. And all the old folks are working at Walmarts now. Went for Walmarts, where would they be? Well, we cited Walmart in Power versus Force because I admired Sam's principles of business. And we corresponded back and forth. And, you know, his business is based on integrity. Integrity. Back up with quality, and if they're not happy, return it with no questions asked. I mean, that didn't occur in business. That was sort of shocking. And Sam and I corresponded back and forth, and I calibrated his level of consciousness and that of Walmart, and I remarked about it in Power versus Force. At that time, when Sam was still alive, I think Walmart was maybe like 380 or something. Anyway, we recently calibrated the world's greatest corporations, and I'll tell you, characteristically, almost all of them are like 202, 204, 205, 208, 206. Rarely is it over 205. Almost all the world's corporations are 205, which is the same as many government bureaus are 205. IRS, various people like that. You know, they're integrous because they have to be. That's the law. But they're not exactly cheerful about it or helpful. They're perfunctory. a waitress at 2:05 says what you have, and she doesn't look you in the eye. You notice waitresses at 2:05. They do their duty, you see. They take their order and then they go away. They carefully avoid any interface with you. And of course they bring it back and the check is correct. You know. There was one restaurant I used to go to, every Tuesday morning for years. Always ordered the same thing. And she would always say, what are you going to have this morning? Tea? How are you going to have coffee? For 5 years I ordered tea every Tuesday morning and the idiot's asking me, do I want coffee? Their income is not as high as the waitress who says, hi, Doc, gonna have the usual? Yep, well, here's your coffee, you know what I mean? So the difference between 202 is you do it, and at 300, your person, you are present. And the waitress at 300 and up now looks at you in the eye and says, hi, Doc, boy, I'm sure glad you're back. How's the week, you know? There you've got the difference of her income is double the other waitress, double. So one drives an old car, and the other one just drives an old car. I myself drive a Cadillac. 1984. I also have a Chrysler, however. Also 1984. They really haven't improved it since then. All right, so we calibrated many things. One thing, the implications, of course, we make, you know, humorous remarks, etc. The reason is because the subject matter is so profoundly serious. The fate of mankind really hangs in the balance, huh? The fate of mankind has been subject to man's capacity to know truth throughout the ages. As I say, in the last century, primarily in my lifetime, 100 million people have died for lack of the capacity to know truth from falsehood. 100 million. Not to mention those that were injured, wounded, starved, abused, shot down, incarcerated, jailed, imprisoned, and subject to torture. But 100 million dead from not knowing the difference between truth and falsehood. Not knowing an integrous leader from a megalomaniac. All right, so we have to get down to what is the nitty-gritty. What is the problem in the world? We want to help the world. Help the world with what? Help the world with what? Groceries? We send money to Haiti. What happened with Haiti? Is it got worse? Better nutrition, higher birth rate, and poverty got worse. The more money we sent to Haiti, the worse the poverty got. How can that happen? Well, we look at the calibrated level of consciousness of this hemisphere. We see that America is about as high as it gets. 421 is a country. Canada, Greenland, somebody's got trouble over here. They're not as high as there. That's where they think they have an alcoholism problem there. 50% of the island is alcoholic. All right, so we still have very decent numbers, 300 and up, 255, the 300s. So what can we expect out of a hemisphere that looks like this? A certain degree of constraint by rationality. We don't expect stupidity, you know, that you're going to do something that's so obviously going to backfire and blow yourself up. We don't expect these people to shoot themselves in the foot, which is something that's common in other parts of the world. Shooting yourself in the foot is a current lifestyle in many countries and continents. However, we do know then, so this is a pretty rational hemisphere. We forgot to mention that Walmart, you know, which we mentioned was based on integrity, it's not as quite as high as when Sam was alive. But we mentioned, we pointed it out, and Walmart now is one of the largest corporation in the world. Still calibrates at 360, leagues beyond any other corporation. No other giant corporation even gets over 205. Nowhere near 360 or wherever Walmart is at. So although Walmart has its enemies, because anything that's successful has its enemies, and everybody hates that which is successful, despite the Walmart haters, it nevertheless shows up in the bottom line. The value of integrity in business is that it shows up as the biggest, most successful corporation in the history of the world. So it's hard to knock spiritual values when you can show that it shows up on the bottom line. Part of integrity is not that you're a saint. Walmart is not sainthood. It is not a monastery. It has defects. So In the 12-step program, the 10th step is willing to admit our mistakes and face up to them on a daily basis. So I see recently in Fortune magazine that Walmart is examining its employment history of women versus men in executive positions, and it's admitting its error and seeking to correct it. So integrity doesn't mean you can't make an error. It means you're willing to own it and do what you can do to correct it and recontextualize it. So integrity then is not, traditionally in business, it's touchy-feely and don't give me that hearts and flowers crap, man. I got a real job to do, and I've got to sell Kirby vacuum cleaners out there. Which I did, so I can speak from experience.